real quick, if I could have, if you served on the board last year, if you would please stand. If you served on the ministry of board or in an area of leadership, area of ministry, would you please stand? Would you give them a round of applause? We thank you so much for your service. And some of those people are going off the board. Others will be coming on. And again, we're so thankful for your service, your dedication, devotion, not only to God, but to this church. So thank you very much. Welcome to Clinton First Ignited Methodist Church. Welcome to the movement. Welcome to what God's doing here in us, through us, around us, most often in spite of us. And welcome to 2019. Happy New Year. Or is it? Are you making this year new? I mean, here we are, almost a full week into 2019. Some of us have made resolutions. I see hands. You made a resolution. Some of us have already given up on those resolutions. There you go. We've started the new year. We've turned the page on the calendar. But is this year a new year for you? Because here's the thing. For many of us, the new year is unfortunately just another year. So the question is, are you making this year a new year? And I know it seems like we talk about this every year. Actually, every year right about this time. But there's an important distinction that needs to be made between a resolution and a commitment. Because a resolution, I think, by nature, is prone to failure. If I resolve to do something, then I'm responsible to see it through, to carry it out, to keep up with it. A commitment, on the other hand, denotes a covenant relationship, that I'm doing something in partnership with or in concert with another person. So in my case, if we truly want to affect change in our lives, we need to enter into a commitment. We need to enter into a covenant relationship with God. Because try as we may, we just can't affect change on our own. God has to do it in us and through us. It has to be of God. Let me give you just a quick little math equation, because everybody loves a little math equation at the start of the year, don't you? No? Okay, we got three frogs on a log by a pond. One of those frogs decides to jump off. How many frogs are left? How many remain on the log? How many think the answer is two? Eugene, if you think it's two. You have to raise them higher than that. Do you think the answer is two? No, it's not. I'm sorry. And the answer we're looking for is three. Because there's a difference between deciding to jump and jumping. The frog only decided to jump. He didn't actually jump. So there's still three frogs. There's a fundamental difference between deciding to jump and jumping. Great inspiration, great resolution. But often we only decide to jump, don't we? And months later, we're sitting on the same log doing the same thing. Because again, try as we may, we just can't affect change on our own. God has to do it. But don't you love the thought, love the idea of a fresh start, of a clean slate? I think most of us do. I certainly do. The chance to correct past mistakes, to right old wrongs, to move forward into life without the burden of bad memories or unhealthy habits. It's why we make those New Year's resolutions, isn't it? We use that time, that stroke of midnight, that click of the second hand to hit the reset button on our lives. It's almost kind of like something magical happens when that ball hits the bottom, isn't it? Here's what I did on New Year's Eve. I was talking to Hannah about this week, and actually I fell asleep. I was watching Dick Clark's Rockin' New Year's Eve thing, and Christina Aguilera came on at like quarter till. That's the last thing I remember. So I fell asleep at probably 10 till, 12. Woke up about 20 after. But this is what I did, and I think it still counts, is I put my left foot up on the ottoman before I fell asleep. So that I started the new year on the right foot. That still counts, right? For many people, the reset button ushers in lifestyle changes, like diet and exercise. They hope that somehow by improving their body, they improve their life. And not that those aren't related. But any gym owner, any health store owner will tell you that the new year is big business as people recommit to their health, which is why I've decided to wait to start my diet and exercise regimen for a couple weeks or until spring when when all these wannabe New Year's resolution people drop off, fade away. I can't imagine going to the gym the first week of January. That would just be crazy because everybody and their brother is at the gym the first week of January. So I'm going to wait till spring to start. I thought this was interesting. You may not think so, but I thought it was interesting. I'm standing up here, you're sitting out there, so hang with me. January is, of course, the month that starts the new year. But do you know how the month of January got its name? Do you know where it came from? It actually comes from the Roman god Janus. Take a look. Ron has a picture of him. He's the one on the left. Doesn't he look weird? He's got two faces. So he's looking forward and backward at the same time. So he's looking into the past as well as into the future. Isn't that weird? Do you find it interesting? Because I thought it was interesting. Do you think it's interesting? Because, thank you, very. Janus was known as the god of doorkeepers or gatekeepers, the god of beginnings. Eventually, they named the first month of the year January, after the Roman god Janus. But the new year holiday, however, signifies putting the past behind us, doesn't it? It signifies looking into the future, looking toward the future, to make that fresh start, to hit that reset button. And to reset something is to set it back to its original purpose, back to its original design. Now, I'm not overly technical. In fact, my daughter got me a new iPhone for Christmas, which was a wonderful gift. But now I carry two phones because I can't figure out how to transfer my contacts from my own phone, which is an Android, to the new phone, which is an iPhone. So I end up carrying two phones. I call Richard, my buddy Richard, every Sunday to check up on him, see if he wants a ride to church. But his number's not in my new phone. So I have to carry my old phone because that's where the contact list is. And I hadn't charged that phone. So that phone is dead. So I'm only carrying two phones, but one phone that is dead. So again, not overly technical. But I do know that when an electronic device isn't functioning properly or it's functioning in a less than optimal way, it can be reset. So whatever gets stuck can get unstuck. Again, I told you, I'm not overly technical. So what gets stuck can get unstuck. Hitting the reset button allows all the connections to run smoothly again. And here's what I found to be true in a similar way. When my life isn't functioning properly, or it's functioning but not at its optimal level or manner or way, I can be reset so that whatever gets stuck can get unstuck. Don't take that too far because that's not my intent. Let's take a look at what Paul says about it. Our passage this morning comes from Philippians chapter 3, verses 13 and 14. Paul writes, "Brothers and sisters, I do not consider myself yet to have taken hold of it, but one thing I do, forgetting what is behind and straining toward what is ahead, I press on toward the goal to win the prize for which God has called me heavenward in Christ Jesus." Okay, let's see if we can unpack this. Let me begin by asking, do you ever feel yourself saying, "I am just so busy. I have so much to do." You ever find yourself there? Is that you? Oh gosh, me too. I need to get back on track with course of study, so I registered for a class, and which was difficult because they don't make it easy. And for someone who doesn't want to take the class to begin with, it would be a real easy excuse to say, "Oh shoot, I couldn't do that because I couldn't get my PID number in time." But I registered for the class, so. But that adds a layer to the other things that I'm doing. It's so easy to get overwhelmed by schedules and by appointments and by to-do list, isn't it? But what are we really doing with our time? Lori asks me that every day when she gets home. What did you do with your time? And I really never have a good answer. But are we so busy doing the things that we think we're supposed to be doing that we miss what we're really supposed to be doing? Let me say it again. Are we so busy with what we think we're supposed to be doing that we miss what we're really supposed to be doing? Paul writes, but one thing I do. We really need to figure out what that one thing is, don't we? Danish philosopher Soren Kierkegaard spoke of those who are able to will the one thing. I believe Kierkegaard was referring to the kind of people who, like Paul, know exactly what their lives are all about. The kind of people who have figured out what the one thing is. And I don't know if you realize it or not, but I think it's worth noting that the phrase one thing is sort of a recurring theme in Scripture. And from my experience, recurring themes in Scripture are always worth noting. Let me give you some examples. For instance, in Mark chapter 10, verse 21, Jesus says to the rich young ruler, one thing you lack, go sell everything you have and give to the poor. When the man who had received his sight was questioned by the Sanhedrin, in John chapter 9, he replied, one thing I know, I was blind, but now I see. Where Jesus explained to the busy, frantic Martha when she was criticizing her sister, Mary, in Luke chapter 10, he says, there is only one thing worth being concerned about. Mary has discovered it, and it will not be taken away from her. And then the psalmist, who proclaims in Psalm 27:4, one thing I ask from the Lord, this only do I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life. What is that one thing for you? I think way too often, way too many people are way too involved with way too many things. We're so busy doing what we think we're supposed to be doing that we miss what we're really supposed to be doing. Paul writes, but one thing I do. And what is that one thing Paul does, you may ask? That's a really good question. I'm glad that you asked. Look again at verse 14. Paul says, I press on toward the goal. And before you ask, Paul's goal, according to verse 10, of the same passage is to know Christ, to be like Christ, to be all Christ has in mind for him to be. And we know from our passage that this goal consumes Paul. He writes, forgetting what is behind, stretching toward what is ahead, I press on toward the goal. Again, isn't this what the New Year's holiday is all about? Putting the past behind us, looking forward to the future, to make that fresh start, to hit the reset button. I ran across something this week that I hadn't really considered. It's kind of a perspective thing. In a commentary on this passage, pointed out that while we're accustomed to saying past, present, future, we should really be viewing time as flowing from the future into the present, then onto the past. Time doesn't start in the past, right? But our focus always seems to be on the past when we're thinking about time. Our focus needs to be on the future because time comes from the future into the present and then on to the past. It's a future orientation. We need to think in terms of future when we're thinking about time. So in regard to the community, Lori had an Emmaus meeting, and several of the people on the team are from Clinton, and they were reminiscing about how great the town used to be, the community used to be. We need to be future-oriented, so we need to not dwell on what the community used to be, but rather on what the community could be. With our church, we need to not focus on what used to be, how the church used to be. We need to focus on how the church could be. With our lives, we shouldn't focus on how we were. We need to focus on how we can be, don't we? It's a perspective. Forgetting what is behind, straining toward what is ahead. What we need to do is hit the reset button. And again, to reset something is set it back to its original purpose, its original design. Consider this. In the terminology of the Bible, to forget doesn't necessarily mean to fail to remember. To forget in the Bible actually means to no longer be influenced by or affected by. So when God promises in Hebrews chapter 10, verse 17, their sins and lawless acts I will remember no more, the writer's not suggesting that God has had a memory loss. That's not even really possible. What he's saying is that God will no longer hold their sin against them, that their sin no longer affects their standing with God, that it doesn't affect his attitude toward them. So when Paul writes, forgetting what is behind and straining toward what is ahead, he's not suggesting some lapse in memory, although that might not be bad, because there's at least a couple of things I can think of that I would rather not think of off the top of my head. What he's saying is that we no longer have to be influenced by or affected by our past. The power of the past can be broken by living for the future. Let me say it again. The power of the past can be broken by living for the future. We can't change what happened in the past, but we can change how it influences us, how it affects us. We can change the meaning of that past. We can be reset. Let's take another look at the passage we use as our call to worship. This is Lamentations chapter 3, verses 19 to 23. Jeremiah writes, I remember my affliction and my wandering, the bitterness and the gall. I well remember them, and my soul is downcast within me. Yet this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. We talked quite a bit, if you remember, about grace. And again, grace is simply unmerited favor. Grace doesn't look at accomplishments. It doesn't look at what has been done. In fact, grace doesn't even look at that which might deserve love. Grace is God's loving us unconditionally. Grace then is getting what we don't deserve. Unconditional love. But now let me tell you about mercy, because mercy is not getting what we do deserve. Romans 6:23, Paul tells us that the wages of sin is death. What we deserve is death. But Paul also writes in 2 Corinthians 5, verse 21, God made him who had no sin to become sin for us, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. When Jesus was on the cross and in his final breath, he says, it's finished. That's actually an accounting term. It refers to the last payment of a debt. Our sin debt has been paid in full. Mercy is sin forgiven. Mercy is sin forgotten. It's the finished work of Christ on the cross. It's that clean slate. It's that fresh start. It's that reset that we've been talking about. Mercy is not getting what we deserve. The passage from Lamentations 3 is one of my favorite promises. He says, because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. Another translation says, his mercies are new every morning. Let me back up the truck just a little bit, because I don't want you to miss what Jeremiah is saying in the context of what Jeremiah is saying. Because just before he declares this promise, Jeremiah is kind of having it out with God. I mean, we didn't read the whole passage, but Jeremiah is not in a happy place in chapter 3. Jeremiah indicates, God has turned his hand against me. He has broken my bones. He has buried me in a dark place. He has walled me in. God has shut out my prayers. Listen, you need to be aware that God can handle your honest thoughts and your honest feelings. God is big enough to handle those thoughts. In fact, what he wants from you is honesty. It's okay not to be okay. Jeremiah is not okay in chapter 3. So he has this little rant, his lament. After all, we're in the book of Lamentations. So, and then he has this self-assessment. Jeremiah says, I remember my affliction and my wandering, the bitterness and the gall. I remember them, and my soul is downcast within me. I don't think we can really appreciate that his mercies are new every morning until we've experienced the darkness before the dawn, can we? I mean, it's hard to appreciate the light of dawn unless you've experienced the fact that it's darkest before the dawn. Unless you understand that you can't have a comeback unless you have a setback. There are moments in life where it may seem like God is a day late and a dollar short. But what I've learned, what I found is that it's often in those moments that God shows up. Here's why I love this passage. Jeremiah declares after his rant, after his assessing of his situation, here's what he declares. Yet this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed. For his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. His mercies, his compassions are new every morning. The English word new comes from the Hebrew word hadas. And it doesn't just mean new as in again and again, as amazing as that is. It means new as in different. It means new as in never experienced before. So today's mercy is different than yesterday's mercy. And that's different than the day before's mercy, and the day before that, and the day before that. Mercy is the reset. His compassions never fail. They are new every morning. And again, that's not a hall pass to do whatever you want to the night before, because his mercy is new every morning. Because as Paul said, we forget the past, we press on to obtain that goal. His compassions never fail. They are new every morning. We can be reset. Mercy is that reset. On the night that he was betrayed, Christ met with his friends in an upper room. Because their lives were about to be reset. They met for one last Passover meal together. And the Passover, as you know, is a very scripted meal. So there are questions that are asked and answered during the course of the meal, and it brings them back to that salvation experience for the Jewish people. And during the course of that meal, Christ went off the script. As he broke time, he took the bread and he blessed it. And he broke it. And he offered it to his friends. He said, "This is my body broken for you. Take and eat of it, each of you. And as often as you do this in remembrance of me." In the same way, he took the cup and he blessed it. And again, he went off the script. He said, "This is the blood of a new covenant, my blood, poured out for you and for many. Take and drink of it, each of you. And as often as you do this in remembrance of me." And we have an open table here at Glen First, which means that everybody is welcome to come in and be a part of this. We do this by intinction, which means you come up and you break off a piece of bread, dip it in the cup, and partake. There's a little box here in front. That money goes to mission if you would like to drop an offering in there. Spend a little bit of time at the rail, and then go back to your seat. If there's anyone that can't come forward, please stay where you are, and Brent and I will come to you. Come as you're ready.